why positive thinking is not enough.
And why would that be a topic of interest to you? Well, because there are legions of motivational gurus writing books, giving seminars, and teleseminars just like this one, spreading the word that all you have to do is change your mind by using positive thinking, and your life will become everything and anything you want it to be. We're sure that you've heard that. We've heard it over and over and over. They tell you you have to change your mind. Well, that's true. And many people, maybe even you, believe that that's a formula for change, success, and happiness. Just change your mind. Just use positive thinking to change your mind.
Well, two questions arise immediately. Number one, how do you do that? That is the foundation question. How do you do that? If I can change my mind, show me how to do that. And the second question is, what do you mean by mind? And what is it that I'm actually going to be changing? Now, be assured that our presentation tonight is not a philosophical discourse, but a very practical hour. So the answers we will present to you to these two questions will be very useful to the goal of actually changing your mind. But before we do, we want you to know a little bit about us. We are a husband and wife psychology team, and we've been working together for the last 20 years, and we've had a very deep interest in the whole idea of changing your mind, how that works, and what you can expect when you actually do succeed in changing your mind. Because, you know, they say change your mind, but what about on the other side? We all have these fantasies and the images of what's going to happen on the other side. But truly ask yourself, how many people do you know who've actually changed their mind in some way that's substantial, and then they told you what it was like after they'd gone through the process? Because the idea of change that we're looking into is not like changing from, for example, one color skirt to another in the morning if you're a woman, or like repainting the wall a different color, or like picking up a book to read and not being satisfied and then choosing another book. In each of those examples, it can be said of you that you've changed your mind. Now, the change of mind that we're referring to is more like a change from wearing skirts to wearing only slacks for the rest of your life. Or like tearing down the wall instead of just repainting it. Or like going from reading word for word to say it 20 words a minute to photo reading at 20,000 words a minute. That's the kind of mind change that we're talking about.
The change of mind we're referring to, which, by the way, is the change of mind many of the success and motivational gurus will tell you that you can accomplish by following their simple techniques. And they tell you that you can change your way of being and change how you perceive yourself in the world simply by using their simple techniques. However, what we're after tonight is change at the deepest level of your life, your deep, deep levels of how you see yourself, how you experience the world, how your daily life unfolds at the deepest, deepest level. And to accomplish that, positive thinking is simply not enough.
Okay, we're going to make this experiential. Rather than you just listening to us and perhaps even taking notes, we would rather you experience this. And so throughout, we're going to ask you to do various things, and this is our first request of you. We're going to begin by asking a question. Have you ever set your mind to something, put out a lot of energy going after what you wanted, and you may have even succeeded up to a point, only to have it all stop or go off in a direction that leads to nowhere or collapse? Has that ever happened to you? Leaving you confused, disappointed, maybe accusing yourself of being insincere or incompetent, but in any case, insufficiently involved. When I went to college for the second time, I graduated with a summa cum laude. I had 42 A's and 2 B's. And you would think that if I got 42 A's, why couldn't I have achieved 44 A's? Well, the reason for it was I decided to take a statistics course for which I was not mathematically prepared. So I got myself off into a psychological macho stance. And I was going to get an A in that statistics course come hell or high water. And I did. Now listen, the A that I got was an 86 because 85 was the lowest A you could get. And for those of you who have gone to schooling, you know that 85 in most cases is like a middle B, even heading toward a low B. In this course, it was considered an A. I got it. But the effort that I had to put into that cost me the two A's in the other courses because I didn't have time to apply myself to the other courses. And that's an example of what I'm talking about, where I put all of my heart and soul into it, but it led me off into a direction that led nowhere because I don't even remember the title of the course that I took. It was some kind of unconscious demand that I was placing on myself to accomplish something I was totally unprepared for, and I had no need whatsoever to include that in my curriculum because I made no use of it. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. Have you ever done something like that and then had it collapse on you or stop, or just lead nowhere?
Think about that very seriously. Have you ever done that? That kind of thing? Perhaps you've done it more than once. Well, I can assure you that I have. I know Jim has. Most people we've ever known have, at some point in their life, just gone off in directions that did not take them where they wanted to end up. And a lot of people suffer through this kind of experience every day.
Now, do you wonder why and how others get what they want, but you seem to be hitting an impenetrable wall and it happens over and over again? And especially when you know you have the talent, the brains, the intelligence, but your plans don't come together and your dreams fade like fog in the sunlight.
Well, there are reasons why this happens. And there is one major reason, which is what we're talking about and looking into tonight. Now, you see, success gurus, self-made millionaires, motivational speakers, relationship coaches, even spiritual counselors routinely preach the mantra that your thoughts become habits, your habits become your reality. Well, of course, they're right. But that's not all there is to it. Yet, look at the international success of the book and the DVD called The Secret. The message there is that you are what you think. True, true, true. Actually, 2,500 years ago, Plato said, "Know thyself." And his instruction is still very much with us today in these various forms. However, these teachers, and some of whom we might even consider so-called teachers, tell you that by knowing your purpose and living with passion, you become an unstoppable force. That's an unstoppable recipe for your success. Once you've got it, you'll never turn back. And one strategy almost all of them rely on is think positively. Of course, they aren't wrong. Positive thinking is very powerful. But here's the big question, and we want you to really, really take this in. Why doesn't what they say work for the vast, vast majority of people, perhaps including you? Because if it hasn't worked for you, how come? Why didn't it work for us? Jim and I came together 20 years ago, and we had many different projects that we wanted to turn into big successes. And we certainly read lots of books on the topic. We meditated and visualized all kinds of success. We imaged in many ways the future success we wanted, but it didn't work in the way that we expected, the way we were prepared to imagine it could work, this positive thinking kind of stuff. How come?
Well, statistics demonstrate that only 3% of those who attend seminars, workshops, teleseminars, any kind of instructional offering, actually make use of what they learn, let alone achieve the dream of success that prompted their attendance. 3%. The remaining 97%, including Judith and I before we discovered what we now teach, who want to throw off the fear of taking risks and asking for help and standing apart from the crowd and overcoming their self-doubt, they're overcoming their self-doubt deep down. Well, they simply can't just change their minds and get into the flow of success by thinking positively. The truth is, if that's all it took, the world and everyone in it would be very different for the better.
And it would be great if repeating affirmations, chanting mantras, putting a rubber band on your wrist and snapping it to remind you of each and every negative thought, it would be great if those kinds of things would make a glorious new life emerge. It would be magic. But for that 97%, that simply doesn't happen.
So you may be thinking, well, mind change is not all there is. You don't just change your mind, you also have to take action. And that's true. It does take action. However, most of that 97% are already working very, very hard. They're taking action all over the place. In fact, work is what the majority of people know how to do. Work, 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 work.
But making that work explode into huge, huge, fabulous success in whatever area of their life is desired, for the 97%, that remains a big mystery. And again, Jim and I certainly know about that. We've been worker bees since we were kids. We know all about working. Absolutely, we have worked very, very, very hard. When our first book came out, The New Intimacy, Discovering the Magic at the Heart of Your Differences, in 1997, we went all over this country doing television and radio. We booked book signings in every Barnes & Noble. It seemed like it was every Barnes & Noble and Borders bookstore and more cities around this country. And, yes, the book was successful, but not nearly as successful as we had imagined. We worked hard, very, very hard. But the huge success we wanted remained a big mystery. Why? And here's the key, because no matter what your conscious mind is doing, no matter what you desire, no matter what you say you want and dedicate yourself to getting, if you unconsciously are in allegiance, I want to say this again, if you unconsciously are in allegiance to an idea, a belief, a person, an attitude that keeps you stuck in place, that unconscious commitment will always, always trump your conscious efforts.
I'm going to say that again, and listen very closely. No matter what your conscious mind is doing, no matter what you desire, no matter what you say you want and dedicate yourself to getting, no matter how passionately you feel you want it, if you are in unconscious allegiance to an idea, a belief, a person, an attitude that is now keeping you stuck in place, if you are loyal to that idea, that belief, that person, or that attitude that is keeping you now stuck in place, your unconscious commitment will always, always trump your conscious efforts, always.
You see, what so many people don't understand, and here's where Jim's and my psychological background just comes in full force, psychologically, every single one of us experience deep inner psychological, and what we mean by that is unconscious psychological forces. And you probably know nothing about them, but they are working overtime to undermine your determination to break free and live a fabulous life. In other words, no matter how much you practice the millionaire mindset or some heart-opening love and romance program or a deeply demanding spiritual discipline, anything like that, the likelihood, the big likelihood, is that you're bound to end up back in the pits, back where you started, suffering from even greater disappointment for your once again misguided and tireless efforts. How does this come to be? Well, to give you a feel for the process, we ask you to think about two different situations.
And again, so that this is part of your teleseminar, not just ours, so that you can become involved experientially. Please take a moment and bring to mind a party or some event that you attended when you walked in, before you even spoke to anyone, you knew and you felt that you were going to have a good time. Most of us have had that experience. You walk in and you think, oh, wow, this is going to be terrific. Oh, this is going to be a good one. And now, would also like you to bring to mind a different situation. Bring to mind a party or some event that you attended, and when you walked in before speaking to anyone, you thought, uh-oh, you knew and you felt a bad feeling, and you were certain that you were in for a very, very long evening, if in fact you stayed long at all. Now, how does that happen? How do you know, without anyone telling you anything, your interaction with anyone, there's no conscious connection with anyone, you walk in and you think, oh boy, this feels really good, or you walk in and think, uh-oh, this is not feeling very good. How does that happen? Well, it's in the feeling that registers the information.
And, you know, when you are really little, when you are a tiny tyke, under 2 years, 3 years, and you don't have language to, you know, not much language, certainly, and when you're really little, you have none, and you don't have the ability to think through what's going on, but you're absorbing the feelings all the time. That's what you have to work with when you're really young, is all those feelings. Often, we bring those feelings and the belief in those feelings forward, and we use them to function as adults. Now, let me just give you a little background so you understand more of what I'm saying. For me, I grew up in a family where my mother was very, very depressed. She was functional, but she was always anxious and depressed. I learned later that she was taking Valium every day to try to manage those moods. My dad was a very high-tempered guy. He would have psycho rages every so often, and he sold cars. He was a brilliant salesperson, but he had 32 jobs in 28 years. So very often, I came home from school to find my dad unemployed once again because he'd blown up at the boss. He'd walked off the job. He'd been angered by something or other. And so there was this deep negative energy in my family. Well, no surprise, I don't remember hardly anything until I'm about 9 years old, because my conscious mind didn't want to know about it. But think about it. I was absorbing those feelings nonetheless. So in my process of working to overcome those holdbacks and roadblocks that were being built into my unconscious, I had to take a look at where I came from. And when we're little, we take those things in so unconsciously that they become the emotional ground on which we build the ideas, the beliefs, our point of view, our prejudices, our expectations, our imaginings about how life is going to be, or how we're going to be, or how other people are going to be. And then those unconscious commitments become what we indeed experience as reality. And we don't have any conscious control over it, because the unconscious is far more powerful. It's very difficult, impossible for many people, to challenge that unconscious reality. They don't even know there's a problem with it. So they just keep repeating the same behaviors, no matter how uncomfortable they may be.
What you have, on the one hand, is you have beliefs that you form as a response to the feelings that you're feeling, and then you believe in those feelings, which are arising from that unconscious set of beliefs, and you carry those beliefs, your belief in those feelings, into your adult life. And that is what you experience as reality.
And that's why positive thinking is never enough to overcome the underbelly, the undertoad of that unconscious reality.
So again, just picture this. You are going into that party, only now we're using the party as a metaphor for what
life was like when you were small. And what happens is you have particular feelings and you have particular experiences that you are not able to articulate, not able to discriminate, and you build certain beliefs based on those feelings. And then you believe that the feelings represent reality when in fact all they are representing is your in-the-moment response to whatever's going on. And then you believe in those feelings and you take them into your adult life and they become your reality. That's another way of saying they are your ego, because your ego is built. Your ego is an expression of all those experiences and those decisions, conscious and unconscious, you've made throughout your life. It is the structure that you have put together that says, this is who I am. So there you are with a belief in a set of feelings that have contained in them a set of beliefs, and that's how your life is being constructed and run from an unconscious perspective. So when Judith said, as she said, positive thinking is not enough, just imagine an affirmation trying to work its way through all of that. Now, that doesn't mean affirmations don't work. They do, but you have to be conscious of the unconscious, at least that it exists, if not really intimate and with some practice in terms of how to interpret it and how to enter into it, so that those affirmations really have an opportunity to work. So do you struggle with internal blocks that hold you back? It's called resistance. Resistance to going forward and a resistance to move against those old beliefs that you, all of us, take and feel as being reality. So what if you could break through your resistance? Not just for an hour, not for a day, but for good. What if you could break through your resistance for good?
Because resistance is a killer. We know. It puts an end to dreams as sure as you breathe. It stops you from getting what you know you want. And here's the worst part. You can actually believe you're succeeding when, in fact, you're falling way short of what can be yours. So if you've had enough of feeling stuck, of those roadblocks and holdbacks that keep you feeling frustrated and envious of other people, and you want it to stop, we created a special program just for you, and it's called Breaking Through Resistance.
It's a tested and proven system that will do the following. It will guide you from your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors, which are the clues to your allegiances and your internal unconscious resistances, to and through the internal thicket of distracting images and bewildering thoughts, that whole jumble that makes it seem almost hopeless. And it'll help you get clear about your commitments, the commitments you've made to yourself or someone else long, long, long ago, long before you knew what the consequences would be.
Now, Jim and I use the words allegiance or loyalty and forbidden to talk about what the unconscious is hooked onto, what it's attached to. You see, allegiance is your unconscious commitment or loyalty to some old belief, a person or persons, a family, a community, whatever it might have been. Your allegiance is your unconscious commitment or loyalty to something from your past, and it's your allegiance, the unconscious allegiance, that gives your belief its serious, deep down gravity. Your allegiance also sets up a field of forbiddance. In other words, that which is in opposition to your loyal belief and which you are not internally permitted to experience or even think about experiencing. You are not allowed to go there.
Here's how that all works psychologically. I'm going to give you an example. Many men feel they cannot surpass their fathers. That is epidemic. I worked during the 1990s very much with men, and I was very much a part of what was known in the 90s as a men's movement. And one of the things we discovered was that many, many, many men suffered from the commitment not to surpass whatever level their fathers achieved. There's an internal emotional ceiling beyond which they cannot pass. And that leads to frustration, crushed ambitions as well as anger, rage, physical abuse, physical disease like heart attacks, high blood pressure, that kind of thing. And here's an example out of my own life with respect to how that sort of thing gets established. Judith and I met when we were in our 40s, and my mother and father came to Los Angeles where we were living then, and we had dinner out, and my brother was there with the woman he was seeing at the time, Judith and I, my mother and father. And it turned out my brother and I were seated at the heads of this table at the restaurant, and my brother went on talking about what he was doing, and everybody was paying attention, and we were oohing and aahing and supporting him and congratulating him as to what he was accomplishing. And that came to an end. And then it was clearly my turn to tell everybody, primarily my mother and father, what was going on in my life. And as I did, I didn't actually see what I'm about to describe to you happen. Judith told it to me after. But what happened was I began to speak, and my father turned to Judith and began to talk about a totally unrelated subject to what I was speaking about. Because I was the challenge to my father's alpha status in the family. I always was from the time I was a child. And Judith said to him, "Don't you want to hear what your son has to say?" And he went, oh, and he sputtered, and then he turned around and looked back to me. Now, what's the significance of that story? The fact is, that kind of dismissal, that kind of ignoring, looking away in a different direction from whatever it was I was doing, was epidemic in the relationship between my father and I. And it was clearly a signal that said, "You cannot go beyond, I will not listen to your successes, I am turning my head away from you." And the subtle message is, do not go beyond me, which for many, many years I struggled with because I had the talent, the brains, I had the looks, I was an actor for 15 years, everything was going well, except I had that internal ceiling, that internal emotional ceiling beyond which I was not internally permitted to go. And so as a result, much of what I set out to do collapsed, simply because I couldn't go all the way. And for years, I often thought of myself as just a dilettante, somebody who just scratches the surface and doesn't go all the way. Well, we're talking about not going all the way because of unconscious content that is stopping you from going all the way. It's not your fault in that you don't know what's going on, but it is your responsibility to come to understand what it is so you can remove it and give yourself the freedom to go beyond. And in that context, positive thinking is just not enough to bore down, to drill down, and to get to those unconscious commitments that are the source of what's stopping and keeping you stuck.
Jim, when you were talking about that, I was thinking about the movie My Big Fat Greek Wedding, and almost everybody saw it. It was such a popular movie, and no surprise, because it had this theme in it. You know, she was Greek, she came from this large, very encompassing Greek family, and when she married a guy who wasn't Greek, but in the end, her dad bought the house next door to his house and had them move in, so that she and her non-Greek husband nevertheless lived next door to mom and dad. So she never left home even though she got married.
And that's a phrase we use often, leaving home. But when we say leaving home, we don't mean moving away physically. Because people move away, they in fact go to Australia, or they go to Europe, or they go to somewhere in Africa, but they don't leave home unless they've left behind those unconscious promises and allegiances and forbiddances that they brought with them from their upbringing. So how do you do that? How do you move beyond those unconscious holds? Well, you leave behind the allegiances by bringing the loyalty to the surface. First of all, you have to know that this structure is real, and it actually is going on in all of us. So the first thing that's required is that you know that this is real. Secondly, you work to bring it to the surface, and you identify what it is, and we'll talk about the way that happens, because the best way to know that you're caught in an unconscious allegiance is because you keep repeating the same behavior over and over and over again in different forms. And when you identify the behavior, and then you use that behavior to trace back to see what it is that you're committed to achieving with that behavior. And then you determine if that's a behavior and a belief you would like to keep, because they're not all bad. They don't all keep you stuck. So some you might want to keep because they're valuable to you, but some keep you stuck. And it's those to which you have to make the commitment that you are going to change your mind. Not your skirts, not your painting of the walls, not just changing what book you're reading, but change your mind deeply so that you actually become someone you were not before.
So, as Jim said, the easiest and best way to identify an allegiance is by watching your own repetitious patterns. Those that keep you stuck in place. Simple example is, you decide you want to lose weight. And then you find yourself eating just like you always have been eating. You're still eating cinnamon buns and fried chicken and lots of gravy on your mashed potatoes and donuts and whatever else. You keep eating. You know you shouldn't be, but you just keep eating that way. And if you look at it, that's how your parents ate. That's how your family ate. That's how the whole family ate. So, are you allowed to lose weight? Well, you have to examine that.
Another example is, and this applies to both men and women, they want to get married, but they repeatedly find the wrong person. We were talking with somebody the other day, and she was talking about her friend, female friend, and this female friend was having a terrible time finding someone to marry and be with because she kept finding guys that did not work for her. And the person we were talking with said as follows. She said about this other woman, she said, her man picker isn't working. And I said, no, her man picker is working perfectly because she keeps repeating the same pattern. So what we have to look at is not that she is picking the wrong men. She is picking the right men to keep an unconscious allegiance in place. For example, I don't know this woman, so I'm just making this up, but it's quite possible that her father wanted to keep her his. And he does it in all kinds of ways, by perhaps putting down her boyfriends or challenging her in her choice of boyfriends. Or maybe her mother didn't want her to marry because her mother wanted her there to take care of her in her old age. So she kept doing things like commenting on how the guys were not that good looking or not that accomplished or didn't have enough ambition or whatever. So this woman kept picking the wrong men. Well, you have to look at it. If it's a repeated pattern, if you're doing this, if you're picking the wrong man or the wrong woman repeatedly, there's only one common denominator, and that's you. So you're the one who keeps repeating it. So you're the one who is in allegiance to some commitment that is unconscious and that is leading to the choice of these, quote, wrong men, so your allegiance never has to be disturbed. That's how this stuff works.
All right. Again, let's make this more experiential, and let's have you open yourself to answer a few questions. And we're going to start by asking you to look at your current situation, some issue that you feel stuck in. You may even feel like you're a failure in some area, but we want to tell you that you are not a failure. Now, really get this. You are not a failure. You are, in fact, a success. The question is, at what? So ask yourself, what idea, person, behavior, belief am I loyal to that keeps me stuck where I am? Because your loyalty to that idea, person, behavior, that's keeping you stuck? Well, you are successful at staying loyal. That's why you are a success.
Here's a second question. If you were living the fabulous love relationship that you dream of, or the fabulous career that you desire, or the fabulous success that you were working to build, the financial success, what in your current life would have to go in order for you to live that dream that you dream? What you can do is make a list, sit down, write out, what would you have to give up? In a way, it's not giving up at all. It's actually moving forward. But if you're going to change your mind substantially, then the relationships that you've made in the mindset that you're in now will not necessarily hold when you move to a new mindset. So the question is, what would you have to give up, including relationships with friends and family, if you were living the kind of life that you dream you would be living? I'm going to say this as gently and as kindly as I know how. There is nothing free here. You will pay a price to change your mind. The price you will pay will be to leave the feeling of being stuck that you're in for the freedom that you can feel, but that freedom and your feeling it will not work with those with whom you are now currently involved. So there are certain things that will have to be left behind. Ask yourself that question.
Now, as you have been listening to what Jim just asked and what I said about that you're actually succeeding, look deep into your belly, into your heart, into your mind, and take an assessment of any discomfort, any objection, any argument, maybe even anger at us that you might feel at our asking you to answer these questions. Because any disturbing feeling that you have is a clue that some unconscious emotional allegiance is fighting back and it is trying to keep running your show. It's objecting. It's making you uncomfortable. It's saying, no, 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 don't listen to them. Because otherwise, what we're asking you to look at would mean nothing to you. It would just be words.
Here's another question. And ask yourself as though your life depended upon it, because it does. Ask yourself, are you willing to fight through whatever loyalty that has you in its grip in order to make the changes you'll need to make? And I just use the word fight, and we use that word consciously. We're using that word consciously because it will be a struggle, and we're not going to tell you any different, because if we did, we would be lying. We would be creating illusion for you. Are you willing to put up the battle against that internal hold that's holding you back in order to make the decisions and the life changes you want to make? And if you don't have an immediate answer to that, that's okay. Just sit with it. But it's a question you have to answer, because there will come the moment when you will have to actually do struggle with those internal forbiddances.
Well, another way to say that, in terms of what Jim just said, if you are willing, if you take on this fight for your life, because that's what it is, we actually call it the war of two worlds. Because when you're caught and you're not yet out of the struggle, you are in a kind of war between where you came from, that world, and the world you want to go to. It is a kind of war of two worlds. Well, when you enter into that war, then you will have made a vote for your courage, for your true self, for your larger future. You will be voting for who you really are. And you will be voting your decision to overcome what we call the fear of being fabulous. Because you see, when you are in allegiance to where you came from, if in any way you got the message to play small, keep down, if you got messages like, who do you think you are? We don't do things like that. You took on the fear of being fabulous. Because if you became fabulous, you wouldn't fit into that family anymore.
So positive thinking is a very, very valuable tool, but not when it is a mere superficial technique. If it doesn't go deep enough to overcome the power of your deeply held allegiances and their corresponding forbiddances, then it's just a superficial technique. It's like believing that the tip of the iceberg, which, by the way, is only about 10% of the entire iceberg, that which is above the water, and that's a metaphor for in consciousness, that's only about 10%. If you think that's all that there is, or that is all that there is, but in fact the 90% beneath the surface is in fact driving the iceberg's movement through the water. So your mind is much the same way, and you can't use techniques that simply stay on the surface and not attend to the fact that a large chunk of who you are is under the water, and the metaphor here is in the unconscious and has to be addressed because, in fact, that's where the most primitive, the most tenacious, and the most struggle-filled moments will occur when you are trying to move forward and beyond where you are now.
And that's why when you become more conscious, you are investigating what is unconscious. Now, it sounds very simple. To become more conscious, you have to investigate what is unconscious. And it is simple in that way, but it is an in-depth process. And that's why change of the mind techniques like affirmations and mantras and, oh, behaving as if, you've heard that one no doubt, fantasizing about what it's going to be like, guided imagery taking you into visions of what your future life will be like, those kinds of change of mind techniques, those kinds of things that go along with the admonition to use positive thinking, they don't deal with the unconscious content of your psyche, and so they have little chance of serious success.
That is, if those are the only ones that you are using. They're very powerful if you use them in combination with awareness and techniques that will drill down into the unconscious and bring to the surface the root cause of what may be holding you back and keeping you in place.
And for about 3% of the population who are already psychologically predisposed to make that leap, people who've done a lot of psychological work already and they are really ready to make the change, well, then that can boost them over the edge, no matter the hardships and abuse they may have encountered in their early years. They can make those techniques work for them. But for the 97% of us, I'm including Jim and me, the unconscious content is the key to changing your mind. It certainly was for us, and we can tell you that the freedom we experience to live a fabulous life is like nothing we could ever have imagined years ago when we were caught in the struggle. We assure you, it is possible. We say if people knew where we came from, they would know if it works for us, it can work for almost everyone.
So if you want to go from your thoughts and feelings and behaviors, the repetitive thoughts and feelings and behaviors, which are the clue to what those unconscious controls are, if you want to go from there through your internal thicket of distracting images and bewildering thoughts, you know what I call that whole jumble that makes it seem almost hopeless, like there's no point in doing anything because no matter what I do, I'm going to be undone anyway. We call that negative head talk. That's one aspect of it. Negative mind chatter. And you want to get clear about commitments you've made to yourself long ago. You made them to yourself and to someone else long ago, long before you knew what the consequences would be. And they are now standing in your way and block your desire and block your ambition and create those frustrations and those bewilderments because you can't seem to move forward no matter how much you want it and no matter how much effort you put out. Well, you can release the power that's been blocked. And you can reclaim what is true for you. True for who you really, really, really are. And that's what you get from our 70-minute personal process program called Breaking Through Resistance. And believe me, Judith and I have worked on ourselves, and we've worked with people at the highest levels of corporate success, those people that seem to have it all. And even they, when they have to move and stretch beyond where they are, they too struggle with resistance. The only difference between them and most people is they have developed techniques, and they have worked with those techniques so that breaking through resistance for them is not as difficult because it's more practiced.
And just remember that positive thinking is not enough all by itself. It can be indeed a valuable tool in combination with your dedication to uprooting the allegiances that you made long ago.
Okay, now we'd like to open up the lines to any questions or comments, because that's our presentation for this evening. And we would love to hear what you have to say, how you responded, or we would answer any questions that you might have.
Hi, my name is Terry, and I am ordering your program. I think you guys are both fabulous. Thank you so much for everything you're sharing.
Thank you, Terry.
I do have a question. I mean, one of the things, as you were talking, I'm going, my mother does that. And, you know, it's I have lived with this all my life, feeling that I needed to be small so she would be okay.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
And it's interesting, and I have felt guilty for even thinking that.
Right.
So I was wondering if that's something that's pretty typical. Like, how dare I think that my mother would do that to me?
Absolutely.
You know, but I think it is on a subconscious level.
What you experience is very, very typical, to feel that you are going to be guilty or that you're going to betray her, to have those thoughts. And we call that the love grip. And what we mean by that is that when you're a little person, when you're a year old, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, you love your parents and you make an allegiance to that form of love, which is they get to be the big people and you're a little person, and they make it clear how you need to behave to fit into the family, and so you try. And you're absolutely right that love grip, which wants to make you as loyal as ever to how you were raised, fights with the independent grown-up self who wants to announce the truth. Not to blame anybody, but just to announce the truth. So, Terry, thanks for saying that, because I certainly experienced it, Jim experienced it, everybody we've ever worked with. The same kind of guilt, and some people, actually, a very small percentage of people, just are so committed to being that child forever that they can't break through. They won't.
Terry, that's what we mean by when we say leave home. Again, we don't mean go move across the country, because I can tell you that I left Detroit when I was in my early 20s. That's where I was born and raised. And in my 30s, I was living in St. Louis, and I could get on a plane to go back to Detroit to visit my parents, and I would get on the plane, and I was 32 years old. And by the time we were across the river, across the Mississippi, I was 28. And by the time we were over Chicago, I was 14. And by the time I walked through the door, I was 7. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
That is not an aberration. What it is, it's a typical, understandable response when what you have not done is understood that there is an unconscious loyalty. We call it the love grip, and in fact, it is based in love, so to ask someone to change it seems almost contradictory. And if someone hasn't looked into that, then as a result, it will dominate, and then you walk in, and you could be 60, and you walk through the door, and you're 7 again. And that doesn't mean that your mother and father and your uncles and aunts and anyone else you knew didn't have the same problem. They just may not have had been psychologically sophisticated enough to deal with it. So what a lot of people do is they just suppress it and don't think about it. So I applaud you for having said on this call what you've said already.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
You're
Terry.
Welcome, Terry. Anybody else with a comment or a question?
Hi, this is Ariana.
Hi,
Ariana, hello.
Hi, I have a combo question. One would be, if you went out on your own and played fabulous and then experienced a trauma and caught yourself playing small, does that mean that it was just kind of lurking around in there and it's now come up because it had a chance to grab you? And if your family's been gone for a really long time, that doesn't mean, of course, that any of the allegiances have faded. They're just going to be there anyway. Am I correct?
Yes. The fact that your family's gone really is not relevant, because what is at play here is what got embedded, you know, when you were very young, and it's still there. And you raise a really interesting point that you did play fabulous, you were fabulous, and then you had a trauma. And often what happens for people is that that trauma punctures into a deep, deep vulnerability that does then take you back into a more primitive way of functioning, and you kind of collapse into a smaller way. Spiritually, we ask people to look at those as a kind of spiritual emergency, that when you were fabulous, it was real, but it wasn't as deep, it wasn't as thorough, and it wasn't as meaningful as it can be now. When you dig your way out of that thicket of allegiance that occurred when you were young, then you take on more substantial depth of being fabulous.
And we congratulate you for playing fabulous and for actually recognizing and acknowledging the collapse or the trauma, and actually then working your way through it. And if you haven't yet, you're on your way, because you're speaking with us about it. So we congratulate you, because it took the courage to play fabulous. It also took the courage to deal with what was happening. And you move forward. The gravitas, the sense of depth, will be there because you were willing to take on this experience. So congratulations.